1220 WGN, the team's flagship radio station.
You're listening to White Sox Weekly on the home of the Sox, 720 WGN.
WGN White Sox Weekly. Hope you're having a great Saturday. Stay cool out there. Harry, did I tell you that I was on the court at 8 a.m. this morning, battling it out in the Shoreline Tennis League?
Nice. And was that indoors or outdoors?
That would be outdoors, sweat through and sweat through and sweat through, t-shirt after t-shirt. Borderline got heat stroke. Had to take a two-hour nap just to be here today and be functional for the show, for myself, for you, for White Sox fans, for James Fegan from The Athletic, who we're going to talk to in a minute. All that happened, and I lost 7-5-6-3.
I'm sorry. How old was the grandpa that beat you?
He was about 10 years older than me, and I really should have had a huge edge in the heat. Thank you for bringing that up. It reminds me of the fact that there was an older gentleman on the court aside from me and across from me, and he had more will than I did today. All right, moving along.
You know, can I tell you something?
Yeah.
Bill Leff, who is very, very good tennis player. He's good with all racket sports. Excellent ping pong player.
True.
Don't ever play him for money in ping pong.
I've played him in ping pong. The guy's amazing. Yes,
he says you're fabulous tennis player.
Well, that's very nice of him. And true and accurate.
Okay.
James Fegan from The Athletic, who does a great job covering the White Sox, joins us on White Sox Weekly. James, were you playing 2 hours of tennis today, thinking about White Sox baseball?
I have to admit that I was not, sadly enough.
But you could. You were sitting back. All right, let's talk about what matters. And James Shields really has been good all season long. A blip here, a blip there, but he's been solid. You look at his record, and that's not good, but I think everybody realizes that James Shields has sort of figured out a way to pitch. The question is, do you think he goes before the deadline? And if he does, what can the White Sox expect to get back? Mid-level prospect at best is what people seem to think, but where are you at on this, James?
I see it kind of similar to the Miguel Gonzalez trade last year, and also in the sense of that happening after the July deadline and then the August deadline, where it's more rationalization of this guy is better than our whatever we're throwing out every fifth day as our fifth starter, so why not make the deal and improve it for such a low cost? Mid-level prospect is kind of a vague definition, but I would say somebody who's probably stalled or doesn't have their way in his current team's plans, like, say, or Ryan Cortell or, Tequan Forbes, who came up for Miguel Gonzalez, somebody who maybe the White Sox like to take a flyer on and add the organization for some depth, but I wouldn't say anything around a core piece or an impact level prospect.
Right, and they got Tequan Forbes for for Miguel Gonzalez last year. He actually was triple shy of the cycle last night for the Winston-Salem Dash, and he's a little old to be in Winston-Salem, but perhaps there's something there.
And Gonzalez is pushed back again, right? He's going to be further away from joining the big league team, James?
The last report we got is that there has been another setback. You know, he's dealt with shoulder issues over the last 2 years. Shoulder's a lot more scary and a lot less straightforward as far as the recovery process than elbow injuries for pitchers. And the fact that this has now set him back two separate times for something that's been a chronic issue for him, it's really worrisome. I don't know how much you can count on him to really return in any form over the rest of the season. As much as, that would be nice, that would provide some depth. Miguel's a great guy. You wish him the best, but it's looking pretty bad.
James, I'm a regular consumer of The Athletic and love your White Sox coverage, and obviously Rick Hahn does too, as he singles you out from time to time. I enjoyed your Q&A, and I don't know how you like most beat reporters are covering the team. You've got to cover like all of the minor league system as well as covering the team. So Dylan Covey has been giving us hope. He pitched so good, and his last few outings have been so bad. What can we expect happens next for the big right-hander?
It's really hard to figure. The thing that kind of defined him having a step forward at the early part of the season from how much he struggled last year was the fact that he was using his sinker a lot more, and that was kind of keeping the ball on the ground, and he showed a lot better control to kind of, make an approach where he's basically challenging guys to hit it, work by not adding extra base runners. He hasn't done either of those things his last few starts, and he's not a guy who can really have average control or worse because, he's going to be such a high-contact guy basically throwing sinkers all over the place, and if that ball can't stay out of the air, it really kind of takes away any kind of dynamic approach of his game, so it's hard to figure. He was still throwing hard. He was like, I think he touched 96 last night. So it's weird that he wasn't getting the life and the results on it that we saw earlier in the season, given that a velo jump and, you know, having better mechanics was the big thing that he said was triggering his hot start. But, you know, if there's not good control, if he's not throwing that very darting, moving fastball for a strike, I don't trust their profile as much as I did, you know, three starts ago, where I thought he's someone who's going to stick in the rotation for the rest of the year pretty easily.
Yeah, long season. We'll see. But certainly last night was not great for Dylan Covey. But the ball to me looks like, it, you know, at least early in the year, maybe not so much last night, but it's darting all over the place. That to me looked like something that could carry and work for him, but we'll see. I want to talk about Charlie Tilson, James, and James Fegan from The Athletic with us here on White Sox Weekly. Still on the roster, some thought that maybe with some changes coming that Charlie wouldn't survive that, but he did. I look at him as, in a dream world, at least from Charlie's standpoint, that he turns into a leadoff hitter, speed at the top, little left-hander, Scott Podsednik type. I mean, I know I'm getting a little tall here, but what are you seeing from Charlie Tilson? I know that the batting average is solid, but he's not exactly smoking the ball all over the ballpark yet either.
I mean, yeah, that's going to be him. He's a guy, got a good hit tool. He's not going to hit for power. I don't know when the first home run is coming. His approach is not really geared towards contact and spraying the ball around. And ideally, if he, you know, maxes out and he hits 290 and maybe has a 330, 340 OBP, that's something you can put near towards the top of the order, have him run around, and maybe mitigate the fact that he doesn't hit for a lot of pop. That's kind of like a rosy projection for him. I see him more as kind of maybe a, you know, a speedy nine hitter who, you know, makes his bank on being a good defender in center field. But then last night he kind of really had a rough night in left. It's a bit of an adjustment towards center, but and he does have the speed to play center. But I see him probably more as a fourth outfielder who, you know, when you put him in, makes contact and puts the ball in play and gives you something on offense in that way. It kind of seems like a choice long-term between him and Adam Engel as far as who can make themselves more valuable in a limited role. But the way Engel struggled recently, I think Tilson has the ability to win that battle, but we'll kind of see over the stretch.
So if you had to go all in it right now on one of those two, who would you pick?
Yeah, I like Tilson just because I have more trust in the bat-to-ball ability holding up over the course of the season. We've seen some good stretches from Engel, but it seems like a very high-maintenance swing that often kind of can get out of the whack if he misses a couple days. So even though he has more power and more pop when he is right, I see a little bit more consistency in Tilson.
How do you explain Yoan Moncada's defense that he'll make like an unbelievable play where everyone in the stands is standing up and then he'll like butcher a couple of ground balls?
You know, based on the fact that when he is called to play, make an incredible play, his plus athleticism and everything just kind of goes into function without thinking, and really the struggles with him are doing remembering to kind of do basic fundamentals and routine plays, and that's something that can kind of lapse when he's not you know, at full concentration. You know, when you have to make a diving play, you know, everything kind of kicks in the gear, your instincts take over, and that's not something that necessarily gets triggered when he's, you know, just remembering to put his body in front of a basic hopper to him. And, you know, Renneria stressed it, and he's acknowledged that it was a problem the last time I talked to him about it. For some reason, it's still going on. Perhaps it's, you know, his offense kind of weighing on him a little bit in the field. He says no, but yeah, at this point, he really can't, you know, dismiss any doubts of his play. It's kind of just become more consistent.
You know, the White Sox have in the past rushed guys up from college to the bigs. And Nick Madrigal looked great this year. Might have been the best hitter in all of college baseball. His team rallied back to win the College World Series. He's a second baseman. I mean, is there any way they're going to, like, move Moncada over to third anytime soon, or do you see Moncada's future at second base?
You know, it's really dicey because I know that's a huge comfort zone level thing for Moncada to stay at second base. He's reiterated multiple times. He's usually a guy who tries to not put himself on a firm position and, you know, be deferential, but he's been very clear that he wants to stick at second base. He thought he was blocked in Boston because of Dustin Pedroia, so he's a little happy about the trade because he thought he'd get to play second base. He should have the arm for third base. He has the strength to do it in a way that Nick Madrigal doesn't. Throwing arm is kind of the demerit on Nick Madrigal's defensive profile, which is otherwise excellent. So in an ideal world, I think Moncada is able to handle that adjustment. Whether or not they'll ever be in a position to have him make it, whether or not, you know, Nick Madrigal will move as quickly as they absolutely think he will, or that Moncada will, you know, we'll be thinking about him the same way as a cornerstone from 2 years from now is not certain. And because of that, you don't necessarily make that decision just yet. They're going to put out Nick Madrigal at shortstop to start out in the minor leagues from talking to Kostetler right after draft night. So we'll kind of see how that develops for a little bit. And maybe Tim Anderson's the guy they're asking to move. But it's definitely something to watch over the next 2 years to see how that develops and where they're at.
James, speaking of the Athletic with us here for a couple more minutes on White Sox Weekly 720 WGN. I think you get the same sense that I do, James, being around the White Sox as much as you are, that they love Jose Abreu. I mean, you'd have to be, it's obvious. I mean, everybody talks about it from Rick Hahn to Ricky Renteria to in the dugout. But then there's also rumors, and Colorado may or may not be interested in Jose Abreu, and the Sox, of course, are in the middle of this rebuild. Do you see any scenario where the Sox get bowled over and they move him?
No, not really. After, this offseason didn't come to pass with that, when he was at the height of his value, when he wasn't in the middle of a month-long slump like he's currently been, when he was 6 months younger than he is now, they still couldn't really get up offers to the value that the White Sox wanted. So I really don't think with the White Sox, holding him in extremely high regard as like a franchise player, that the offers are all of a sudden going to rise up to the level that's going to pry him loose if it didn't work out in December.
Is there any truth to the rumor that the Sox are considering making Matt Davidson their closer?
I will go all in pushing this rumor until I get vehement denials about it. He's got a wipeout splitter. They should put him back there.
We haven't talked about it on the show last night. If you missed it, the Sox lost 11-3 last night. The highlight of the game was Matt Davidson coming in the eighth inning. Gets a 1-2-3 inning, strikes out Rougned Odor, if memory serves, to end it on a nasty. You think it was a split, James? I was thinking it was a curveball. Whatever it was impressive. And he's throwing a 92 mile an hour fastball. He's then throwing whatever that thing was at 72. I actually would be interested in let's do some Shohei Ohtani here. It's a rebuild. Why not have Davidson available in the pen a day or two a week? What do you think?
I mean, it'd be interesting. I guess it's whether they think he'd be up to it as conditioning wise. And I know it's a lot of bear to handle as far as the workload and preparing for it. I think he's someone who's very focused on his hitting right now, probably. But yeah, he was a dominant high school pitcher. Benetti tweeted out earlier today that Davidson confirmed it was a splitter, but he set it up with sequencing. He like ran it high with 92 and then threw a splitter with drop. It was perfect. So it'd be interesting.
And for the record, I was joking.
I'm not.
It doesn't sound like he's joking.
It was obvious. I'm like, he's going to throw that, whatever. Uh-huh. I guess it was a splitter. Okay, he's going to throw the splitter again here, because it was obvious that he was actually setting things up. I'm going to go high. Matt Davidson was awesome last night.
Hey, we love Carson Fomer on this show. What's look in your crystal baseball, please, James. What happens to Carson Fomer?
He winds up as a pretty good 7th-8th inning guy. He's got good stuff. He has a good cutter that he throws a lot of sink and drop. If he just focuses on those two pitches, with his running his four seamer as much movement as he has, he'll probably be good in short bursts. You run it up to 94, 95, and when he has control problems kind of winds himself out after one or two hitters, it doesn't wreck your night or throw off all your plans because he's a short reliever.
James, you do great work, man. We love having you on. Give me one name that you think will be moved at the deadline before you go.
As much as he's been a great guy to deal with and has been great down the stretch, Story is on an expiring deal, and he's a very known commodity throughout baseball. There should be sufficient offers for him.
Fair enough. Makes sense. All right. James, we'll talk to you again soon. We appreciate it.
That's when you move your guy Davidson into the closer role, right? Carm, when Soria gets dealt.
Good thinking, Harry.
Sounds good.
James, enjoy your day. Thanks for the time.
All right, thanks for having me.